Hello, welcome to Power Play. I'm Joyce Napier. Don Martin is off this week. Tuesday, April 25th, on a day when investigators are looking for answers after yesterday's deadly attack in Toronto. Plus, who is Alec Manassian? What was his motive? Why? That's the question we're all asking. Also, we will get an expert take on what could have motivated the alleged attacker, what role did the internet play, and how does Canada protect against low-tech lone wolf attacks like this one? Is it even possible? We will be speaking to Public Safety Minister Ralph Goodale about the current threat level in Canada. But first, this morning the Prime Minister addressed the nation. Justin Trudeau is calling what happened a tragic and senseless attack.
We need to continue to reflect on the changing situations in which we're in, but we and do everything we can to keep Canadians safe. But we cannot, as Canadians, choose to live in fear every single day as we go about our daily business. We need to focus on doing what we can and we must to keep Canadians safe while we stay true to the freedoms and values that we all as Canadians hold dear.
Earlier today, the alleged driver of that van appeared in court. 25-year-old Alec Manassian was charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder and 13 counts of attempted murder. A Facebook post that police alleged was written by the Toronto van suspect has been removed, along with the account it was attached to. The post reads in part, "The incel rebellion has already begun. We will overthrow all the Chads and Stacys. All hail the supreme gentleman, Elliot Rodger." Elliot Rodger was responsible for a mass murder in 2014 near the campus of the University of California, Santa Barbara. He stabbed and shot and ran over his victims before taking his own life in his car. 6 people were killed and 14 others injured in that attack. Rodger, who posted his manifesto to YouTube, also described himself as an incel, a term used by people who are involuntarily celibate. Joining me now in studio is our colleague, CTV's Mercedes Stevenson, our security specialist. Mercedes, what do we know about this man so far?
Not a lot. We're really still trying to get a picture of him. Certainly, we've heard from neighbors that he lived at home with his family, that we've heard from classmates. He seemed to struggle, seemed to have issues. They were surprised in some cases to even hear he might have been driving the van. But we also learned something interesting today, and that's that he very, very briefly was a member of the Canadian military. It only lasted for 2 months, and he got through precisely 16 days of training before he bailed out and voluntarily asked to be released. The military sources I've talked to say he was far from a stellar recruit. He was clearly struggling, but they didn't see any signs that he was dangerous or to make them think he might be angry or looking for revenge. He just seemed like he didn't really fit in. And that's something we've heard over and over again in this case, that people didn't think of him as dangerous, but that there was definitely something different about him, something that seemed to create problems for him fitting in socially. And we're hearing from the police and from the national security authorities that at this point, and it's important to say at this point because they're always looking at all the options, they don't see a national security connection. They're really looking at his mental state as the primary factor.
But what's interesting is that we heard from the Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan earlier, who said, look, it's a very rigorous process if you want to get into the military. I imagine there are interviews. A lot of people may have talked to him. They may have assessed this man and found absolutely nothing.
It is possible. We don't know a lot about what happened in that process other than the requirements. You have to get through a medical. If you exhibit clearly troubling psychological traits, that should mean something that prevents you from getting in. You do have to be considered fit. If you say anything like you're looking to be violent, that's a red flag and recruiters are trained to notice that. He somehow made it through that process, which would include things like a criminal records check, and now it makes sense he was not known to police, despite what was being reported yesterday. And you get a sense that he made it through and may have seemed odd, but it was nothing to keep him out of the forces. And that's sort of this interesting question. We're trying to find out how he made it through. Did anyone notice anything about him during that process? But they won't say much in the military because there's all of the privacy laws regarding whatever he put down on that application.
So what are your sources? Because, I mean, that Facebook post is odd for people such as myself, and I imagine the viewers that are watching us. I mean, what a strange and disturbing Facebook post. What have your sources told you about that post? What do we know about it?
So when I first read the post, my reaction was a lot of people at home. This, what language is this? I don't understand. This is nonsense. It's gobbledygook. It must be just the sign of a disturbed mind. Motivations aside, it now makes a lot more sense in terms of the words he's using. Knowing his military experience helps us to decode what some of these terms are. So it starts off by identifying himself as Private Recruit Manassian. Well, he was a recruit into the Canadian Forces, and the first rank is private. He then has this series of numbers, 00010, infantry. Well, that's actually the code the Canadian Forces use if you're going to become an infantry soldier. He goes on to say he wants to talk to Sergeant 4chan. We don't know exactly what that's supposed to mean. 4chan is, though, a social media site where there have been difficulties with very misogynistic groups, people who identify themselves as incels with virulent views about women posting. Is he talking about a person on that site, a section on that website? We're not sure. Then there's another number that says C, and there's about 8 digits after it. That looks just like a Canadian Forces identification number. It's like a social security number for you or I. It's how we identify ourselves. The Canadian Forces wouldn't confirm if it was actually his service number for privacy reasons, but that was what drew the eye of the military sources who initially brought it to me, is they said, these words, these terms, these numbers, these look like someone who's been in the forces at some point, because normal people outside don't know that. There's no implication that the military played a role in what he did, and they were very careful to note that he never went through any weapons training. He was basically in classroom situations where you have to put tight corners on your bed and show up on time. That's the point of the training. But it helps us to understand a little bit more about what he's saying in this post that looks like gibberish. It's actually not.
So where do investigators take it from here? I mean, we heard from, Safety Minister Ralph Goodale, we are not, the level threat remains where it is. This is not a national security threat. So how do you investigate? This is a mass killing. How do you go about and investigate and find out what motivated this man?
Well, that's the big question. If he talks to them, that will be very helpful. Sometimes people feel the need to talk when they're in custody, and that could help to inform what happened. Beyond that, though, they're not going to rely on what he presents to them. They will paint a profile of him in part with that, but also by speaking to his family members, his parents, his brother, saying, what was he like? Did he have any known mental health conditions? Had he exhibited this kind of behavior before? Who are his friends? Does he have any? Talk to them. And then, of course, the phone is the best friend of a lot of these investigators, because especially younger people have very strong online presences often. In his case, we can only find a few small things under his name. But they'll be looking at who has he been calling, who has he been direct messaging, FaceTiming, any way he might have been contacting people, posts or groups he might have liked or endorsed that might give us a part of a picture of either if he was talking to other people or what might have inspired him or tipped him over the edge to act.
Thanks so much for this, Mercedes. I think we're going to spend many days talking about this and trying to figure out why, really, is the question we're all asking. Thanks so much. For more on that Facebook post and what could have motivated yesterday's attack, what could have gone through the mind of the driver of the white van, joining me from Waterloo, Ontario, is Lorne Dawson. He's a professor of sociology and legal and religious studies and an expert in radicalization at the University of Waterloo. Good afternoon, Professor. We don't have many clues yet. We will hopefully in the next few days. What can we infer from this Facebook post?
Well, it is looking more and more, as people are suggesting, that some kind of mental health issues and certainly personal struggles and frustrations were the key to this attack. In its pattern, of course, it did look a lot like the kind of low-tech terrorist assault that ISIS has been encouraging people. And he may have been emulating them to some extent. But now I think it is that he probably, if this turns out to be very accurate, this post, then it suggests that he really is following the model of, you know, of this Elliot Rodger and his attack, where he used his car as well to attack some people. I mean, there are a lot of interesting parallels here. There's a gray area between the sort of terrorism attacks and these kinds of more personal attacks. And, you know, we talk about lone actor terrorism, and a high percentage of lone actor terrorists have recognizable mental health issues. They often blend issues of public causes with their own personal grievances. They often live in a kind of fantasy world and then are acting out their fantasy. We can think of people like Anders Breivik in Norway fits this pattern. I think even Bissonnette in Quebec now, as we're learning at the sentencing hearing for him, and we're hearing the testimony of the forensic psychologist, he tends to fit this pattern as well.
But these seem to be sort of radicalized, angry young men, maybe. They found a community online. They kind of troll.